celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. This is Canucks Connected.
Daniels in the slot. Olin moves up, shoots.
Weekly look back that focuses on all the chills.
Round a long pass to Pavel Bure. In the clear, right in. Yeah, it scores! Pavel Bure has won it in overtime.
And thrills.
Campoli has it. Flips it. Furrow steals. Cutting in. Shoots. Scores! They slayed the Dragon!
Of a half century of Canucks hockey, here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another brand new edition of Canucks Connected. It's our weekly profile of members of the Vancouver Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650. Well, we're less than a week away from one of the biggest fundraising events of the year for the alumni family, as the annual Canuck Country Rock Show is set to take place Thursday, April 29th. The event, which the last few years has been held at different live venues in downtown Vancouver, is going virtual this year. Legendary Vancouver goalie Kirk McLean sits on the board of directors for the Canucks alumni. I caught up with him on the phone earlier this week and asked him how preparations have been going for this year's event.
Awesome, to be quite honest with you. The only thing obviously missing is the live crowd and the live venue. But, our alumni guys that did their part as far as roundtable discussions and telling stories and having a little bit of laughs. And then, of course, our artists that have done an incredible job of, getting in their songs and their sets to make this thing happen. It's going to be just a wonderful hour or so. This is all they've been able to do for the last year and a half is do these virtual concerts or get-togethers themselves, and they're professionals, they're world-class professionals, and it'll be like watching the concert on TV.
The alumni has done such great work over the years with this particular event to be able to give back to worthwhile charities, and yeah, it's no different this year, but the focus point when it comes to the fundraising element goes to really something that I think each and every one of us, no matter how old we are or no matter where we live, that we're all in some way affected by it, whether it's with our families or friends, but helping out, raise funds for programs that go towards mental health. This is a very important initiative, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, especially with what's going on in the world, with this pandemic, I think, as you mentioned, we've all been affected in one way or another, whether it was, like you said, through family members or friends or acquaintance or whatever it may be. It's something that is finally coming to the forefront, if you will. It's always been put on the back burner. People have been struggling with mental health forever, but they were maybe looked at as something, or people that were like the plague or something like that. And it's a big deal. People lose their lives over it. Their families, their jobs, whatever it may be. And as we all know, it's not just people that are living on the streets and maybe are addicted to substance abuse, and it's your family member. Your doctor, it's your lawyer, it's your teammate in whatever sport you're playing, professional or amateur. So it's a real thing, and I'm certainly glad that we're involved with this specific charity and initiative with this concert, and we always will be, because in our business, as far as hockey players, we've seen it over the years. Colleagues that have struggled with it, and unfortunately, some colleagues that have taken their life over it.
Kirk McLean is with us here on Canucks Connected, talking about the upcoming Canuck Country Rocks show, which is going virtual Thursday, April 29th. Aaron Prochette, who's a member of the Canuck alumni family and one of Canada's top country musicians, he's been a part of this from the get-go. He'll be a part of it on Thursday, and He says, as much fun as it is to be able to get on stage and sing some songs and raise some money, it's equally as fun to see Kirk McLean get the cowbell in hand. Yeah. He says it's unlike anything he's ever seen. There's a lot of good vibes that'll come with a very important night, isn't there?
Yeah, there always is, and you know, we have a lot of fun with it. As you know, athletes want to be either rock stars or country stars or actors or whatever it may be, and then vice versa. You talk to a lot of the musicians or the actors, and they you know, they've either grown up playing hockey, or they certainly you know, want to get their hands on a baseball glove or a hockey stick or whatever it may be to try their luck at that. So it's always fun to see you know, myself get up there and act like an idiot with the cowbell and have a good old time, thinking I'm keeping the beat. Maybe I'm not. And then, of course, Gary Nyland, who actually is a very good guitar player, is like, you know, one of the members of the Odds now. So it's great. We've had Mike McWilliams sit on the drum kit and do a wonderful job. You know, it's been very fun to watch. Garth Butcher gets up and sings once in a while. Cliffy gets up and sings once in a while. So there's some hidden talents, at least we think there is, and we have fun with it for sure.
It's such a great cause. It's such a fun night, and it's going virtual this year. Kirk, thanks very much for, again, putting this into the spotlight and giving our listeners a better idea of how it's all going to play out next Thursday. Have a lot of fun and raise a lot of money, and thanks for doing this.
We hope so, Joey. Thanks for always helping out, and we always enjoy your company, and you do a lot of stuff with us, and we thank you for that as well.
That's Kirk McLean joining us here on Canucks Connected. And once again, you can get tickets right now for the 2021 edition of Canuck Country Rocks. You can get them online at the alumni's website, and it's easy to remember, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. Now, coming up in today's program, we're going to be joined by two former Canucks who are two of the most accomplished players to ever come out of the Kootenay region of BC. Plus, we'll also scroll through the Canucks record books and highlight some of the more important moments on the Canucks calendar when we take a look back at this week in Canucks history. Time now, though, that we profile our first guest, who grew up having a standout junior career in the Western Hockey League, which included playing at the World Juniors. He'd become a first-round NHL draft pick, play at the Winter Olympics, and wound up holding different roles with the Canucks for more than 20 years.
Our next alumni profile is on former Canucks forward and executive Steve Tambellini.
Here comes Tambellini. Tambellini, and Craig gathers in the loose puck. Tambellini and Milbury. Now Milbury goes after Tambellini. And Tambellini got in a couple of licks as they both went down.
Tambellini across the blue line to Perfin. Perfin moving in. It's a Tambellini score!
He tried to feed it over to the right side to Curry, who was behind everybody. This is Tambellini. Score! Right through the leg of Andy Mould. And the Canucks do not give up.
Steve Tambellini was born and raised in Trail, BC, and left home as a teenager to play in the WHL with the Lethbridge Broncos. He was Rookie of the Year in 1976, and 2 years later, he'd play alongside Wayne Gretzky for Canada at the World Juniors. He was taken 15th overall in the 1978 draft by the New York Islanders, and was on their team that won the Stanley Cup in 1980. During his 10-year NHL career, Tambellini also played in Colorado, New Jersey, and Calgary, as well as 3 seasons for the Canucks in the late 80s. When he retired, he joined the club's front office and held numerous roles in the business operations before moving to the hockey ops team under Pat Quinn. Tambellini would be on the Canucks staff for nearly 2 decades and was part of Hockey Canada's management group that won gold at the Winter Olympics, World Cup, and World Championship. Steve has been involved in the NHL for over 40 years and has deservedly been inducted into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. I recently talked with him from his home in the Okanagan and started out by asking him what his earliest recollections were of his father, Addy, who played for his hometown Trail Smoke Eaters team, which won the World Championships way back in 1961.
Well, I was so young when they came back and riding on fire trucks and world champions that, you know, I got to see, you know, a few years later of what it really meant and what that team meant to so many people as the years went on. But just the seeing and hearing the stories that Dad would talk about so many times, and so interesting, Joey, that, you know, I could travel to Sweden, I could travel to Russia, I could travel to Germany, and people around hockey would recognize the name, and they'd say, "Is this your father?" And they want to talk about the Smoke Eaters, and they rattle off six names of that team. It's just incredible of the stories that people tell about that hockey team. So as a young person growing up, really influential in my development of one's responsibility, I think, and a way to treat people and to act, even though you are being so well respected for something that you've accomplished.
Steve Tambellini is our guest today on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. Your development through junior went the WHL route. In the mid-70s, you spent three seasons with the Lethbridge Broncos Hockey Club. You were named the WHL's Rookie of the Year in your first year. How much fun did you have playing on the prairies when you look back that long now?
Oh, Joey, you know, traveling in the junior leagues at the time, a big trip was going to Cranbrook or something like that. So for me, trail did seem like a faraway place, this place called Lethbridge. I'd never been there before. I never seen the cities that didn't have the mountains like the Kootenays did. So it was a real life-changing kind of moment. But so many good things happened for me there. I actually was listed by Brandon a few years back by one of, I think, their general manager at that time. And my father didn't want me traveling so far away that he couldn't be able to come and visit mom and dad. And so he didn't allow me to go there, and it took about a year and a half, and Earl Ingerfield, you'll recognize that name from the New York Rangers, famous player in the NHL and throughout the WHL, who lived in Lethbridge, was the head coach of the hockey club. So Earl had found out about this, and Dad and him had talked, and Earl eventually was able to make a deal for me from Brandon, and that's how I got to Lethbridge. But such good memories there, Joey. I got to play with Brian Sutter, Dwayne Sutter, and also Daryl. So I think I played with five of them throughout my career, but that was a very influential. My protector, Brian Sutter, my first year, it was easy playing with him.
1978 goes down as a year I'm sure you'll never forget. I want to start with it by representing Canada at the World Junior Championships. The tournament was played in Montreal. The head coach was a legendary junior bench boss, Ernie Punch McLean. And although you didn't win the gold medal, Steve, you had a chance to play alongside a player that really started to catch the attention of hockey fans on a global stage. What comes to mind, your first opportunity playing for Canada and playing alongside Wayne Gretzky?
Well, there were so many things. It was a first in so many ways. If you could think about the amount of players that the NHL games that were played by that roster is incredible. The amount of years that were played by most of the players. And obviously Wayne was, you know, not just a young player, but he was the best player in the tournament. But we were playing in the Montreal Forum at Christmas time. And if you, you know, it wasn't a sold out affair, and it was broadcast, but it wasn't as big a deal as what Hockey Canada has made the event into now. But it was still so impressive, important for us that we were representing Canada at that time. But, you know, Wayne had said once to me that he was coming to the training camp just for the experience. And that, you know, he named all the players on the team that he thought were going to make it and all the centers that were there. And he said, "I've just come in here and you guys are going to have a great team." And I said, "Well, I haven't," you know, it was the first time I met Wayne, but I said, "I'm sure you're going to do well at this camp too, Wayne." So, as you know, as the story goes, he becomes the leading scorer of the entire tournament. And some goals that he scored on YouTube are still incredible. I just remember sitting on the bench with Stan Smeal and Kurt Fraser, and we're watching some of the things he's doing. That's 16. So we're just about 20, and he's 16 years old, and he's doing things that are just we had never seen before. So it was an incredible moment for a player at that age to have the best players in Canada in one spot and beginning the World Junior Tournament as we know it today.
Fast forward a few months into the summer, you're drafted in the first round, 15th overall, by the New York Islanders. What do you remember about draft day, Steve? Where were you? How did you find out the news?
At that time, Joey, I think they maybe took, I'm guessing, 15 or 20 players to the draft that they projected would go. I believe there were 21 teams at that time that would be drafted in that spot, and we were flown to Montreal at the, I believe it was Queen Elizabeth Hotel. And we were just in a ballroom, and there were the teams in the middle of the floor, and there's, like I said, maybe 15 or 20 players that were there. I was there by myself with my agent, Bill Waters and Al Eagleson at that time. And, yeah, it's a life-changing moment. You know, all the things that you think where you're going and you're not going, and then is it going to happen? And then when Bill Torrey, a wonderful gentleman, and Jimmy Devolano, head of player personnel, called my name, I was elated, to say the least.
Steve Tambellini is with us today here on Sportsnet 650, talking about his early days before stepping into the NHL. You mentioned after the Islanders picked you in the first round, you went right from junior to pro. And talk about hitting the jackpot as a young teenager. You wind up stepping into a team that was just kick-starting their, well, already really had become an NHL dynasty franchise. You were your first full year playing in the league, part of the team that wound up going and winning a Stanley Cup, but you never got a chance to play in those meaningful games. How much of a roller coaster ride was that first rookie season for you playing on Long Island?
You know, you're just so happy as a young person to, one, be a part of that. Two, when you see the level of expertise of that roster, a team that goes on to win 19 playoff series in a row, it was amazing. There were five lines, I think, on that team that could play against any team in the National Hockey League at that time. And Bill Torrey and Al Arbour kept that through most of those 4 years. They could have won maybe five cups, who knows, but it was amazing. But I think the thing that stands out, Joey, is just the hockey, yes, it's obvious, but it's the people inside. You get to see the reason why they win. It's not just talent, but the character and the leadership of so many people. And I don't mean just coaches and managers, but so many people inside a dressing room, so many players where, you know, all the teams talk about, well, there's four guys that are running this, or this is the leadership group. I can tell you that entire roster was a leadership group. And the 21st man on that roster could speak to Dennis Potvin to tell him to pick up his game and be confident in saying it, because the whole group had his back. So I learned so many life lessons from that group and have the utmost respect for how strong and how caring they were for each of their teammates, and made sure that everything was good for your teammate on and off the ice at all times. It was incredible.
Not to pass over what transpired over much of your career, but after your first 3 years in the league with the Islanders organization, you were traded to the Colorado Rockies. That team eventually switched markets to leave Denver and become the New Jersey Devils. You were an original Devil playing at the Meadowlands, and then you made your way back out west. You played with the Calgary Flames, and then you came home to BC. Was it always a dream of yours to one day become a Vancouver Canuck when eventually you did join them in 1985?
You know what? I think you could probably, every former player that gets a chance to play in the NHL always thinks about playing for his home team. You hear the people speak from Ontario about playing for the Maple Leafs. It was the same thing for the Vancouver Canucks. You wondered what that would feel like. going back then. I was able to have that chance for 3 years a player and then 25 years working in management. But as a player, it just felt I was so excited that I knew that my friends and family would be there, that my kids were had a chance to grow up there. It was really, really special. I mean, we had some great players, and I remember the day that Pat Quinn and Brian Burke walked in, and they were in charge of the entire operation, obviously, and what that meant, and it was just such an exciting time.
You know, something happened when they came into the organization, and I wonder if it left such a lasting mark with you to be able to work alongside with them in the future, and that was in the 1987-88 campaign. They let you go play for Canada's team, the national team, headed up by legendary coach Dave King, not only on the international stage with various tournaments, but ultimately when Canada hosted the Winter Olympics in Calgary in 88. That's something that just doesn't happen now. Obviously, the league takes a break for players to compete for their respective countries, but that's something that just didn't happen that often, did it back then, Steve?
It didn't, Joey, and I think the there were three players: myself, Jim Plotinski, and Tim Waters from Winnipeg that were allowed to go from their National League teams, and that was the first time I believe that happened. So to play in your own backyard, and the Olympics, you've experienced it in Vancouver. I experienced it in Calgary and Salt Lake City and Torino. The emotion that comes from a city and a province and a country when it's in your own backyard is incredible. You'd sell your house to be able to stand up there at that moment to win a medal for your country. So that was very, very special, and I was grateful to Pat and Brian that they allowed me to do that. Especially from, I felt like growing up, there was this international perspective of the game that was something I always wanted to do because I knew how important it was to my family growing up, of the experiences that Dad had had and the success that he's had. So that was very, very important to me.
Steve Tambellini is with us for a few more moments here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. When you retired from your playing days and you finished off a couple of years playing in Europe, you capped it off in 1990. It didn't take you that long to get involved into the front office of the Vancouver Canucks. I remember going to a game and seeing you there as the media relations director in the press box. And then eventually you were promoted to be working in the hockey operations department alongside Pat and Brian, and that carried on into the next generations of management with the organization. Was that something you always had your eye on as a player, or was it the relationships you had built with those here with this organization that made it a natural fit once retirement presented itself?
Well, there was two things. One, you never know if you're going to get a chance to go back in the NHL. There's lots of talented people out there that never get a chance. So I prepared myself. I was playing in Europe, and I was going to school as much as I could in the summertime, doing as many courses I could, interested in private business, small businesses, those type of things. But I had always thought about the NHL at one standpoint also. At one time, we had talked a little about coaching, and I think you had to be honest with yourself that whether you really want to be a coach or not, it's a different lifestyle. It's a great life. But I figured out very quickly that I enjoyed the business aspect of the game. And when Brian and Pat had called me, I was getting ready to go back and play another year overseas, and they said, we'd like to talk to you about joining our club. And I was so excited just to hear from them again. And I listened to Brian, I listened to Pat, and they offered me a job of director of communications at that time. And I was able to learn the business on so many different levels, having a great conversation with both of those guys, Berkey every morning, of course, and Pat, my first impression, meeting him sitting down in front of his massive desk. And he asked me what I wanted to do, and I told him exactly what I did. And he asked me, well, so that means you want to take my job? I said, no, I don't want your job, Pat. He said, well, good. You told me what you want to do. And he said, I'm going to move you around different parts of this company, not on the hockey side, but you're going to learn how hard people have to work to generate $1 revenue for this company. He said, you're not going to have an ego doing it. You're going to be working on everything. So he put me in marketing programs, ticket programs, you name it on the business side that I was involved in, which became my MBA. And then after about, I think it was about 9 years or, about nine or 10 years, he moved me over to the hockey side, which gave me a great perspective of how finance and the marketing and the communications and the whole group, the machine that has to work for the hockey operations to be able to survive. So my thanks to Pat Quinn and Brian Burke bringing me in there was forever grateful.
Well, and I'm sure he had a strong voice into having you join Hockey Canada's family to be a part of the legendary Olympic championship when Canada ended that long drought to win a gold medal in 2002. Does that stand out as maybe the best accomplishment you've been a part of in your long multi-decade hockey career, Steve?
That was such an honor to be able to do that with Kevin Lowe and Wayne and Bob Nicholson and Pat Quinn as the coach and Hitchcock and Wayne Fleming and Jacques Martin. It was such an honor for everybody. But that moment was quite significant, I think, for our country and the team and the players. But it was, you could feel the weight. I remember my wife telling me, you know, after we had won, and she said, look how different Wayne looks. And, you know, you could just see the weight of the world off his back because he carried a lot of the emotion for the whole group through that thing. But the Olympics, working with the same group, winning a World Cup, going to another Olympics in Torino with them, winning the World Championship, as a general manager, winning the silver as a manager, those chances to work for your country. And Bob Nicholson was so instrumental in just orchestrating that whole era and time of people was just incredible. So very, very fortunate to be part of that.
Steve, I am short on time, and I'm just loving the stories that you're sharing here, because I know there's so many Canucks fans of all ages that remember these moments clear as day. But now that you're no longer with the Canucks, and a lot of people will be aware of the different roles you've had with other organizations over the last number of years, you've been a proud papa to see your hockey family, your young ones, get involved in the game at various levels. And I know you're staying involved and being close to the sport, albeit here in British Columbia. Fill our listeners in as to how day-to-day life is for Steve Tambellini and what the journey has been like for the Tambellini family.
Oh, well, I'm blessed with three wonderful children, and Jeff was married to a beautiful young girl, Justine, and they're expecting their first child in June, so that is going to be a beautiful moment. My daughter lives in Vancouver, and she's doing great. Very proud of her. And Adam's playing in the SHL in Sweden in Rogla, so they're in the semifinals. So sport and hockey is every day continuous. So I'm watching hockey every day as usual. And one thing I'll never say is that I'm going to retire. So we'll see what tomorrow brings us. But things are great. We've got a great life here, but we're looking for new and great things all the time. So we have a wonderful family to experience that with.
Well said. Thanks so much for doing this, Steve. It's great to hear your voice. It's great for you to share your stories with our listeners. All the best to you and your family. Be well, stay safe, and look forward to hopefully seeing you in the rink again real soon.
Joey, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
That's former Canucks forward and team executive Steve Tambellini joining us today on Sportsnet 650. Stay with us. When we come back in a few moments, we're going to hear from another BC Hockey Hall of Famer who hails from the Kootenays, that's known by many to have scored some of the biggest goals in franchise history. You're tuned in to Canucks Connected, profiling the Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected, a show celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. Here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected as we continue to profile the Vancouver Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650. Don't forget, you can follow the Canuck alumni all year long on their social media feeds. They keep them up to date on a nearly daily basis. They're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all with the same handle, at Canucks Alumni. Plus, they've got their own website that's got great info on players from all five decades of the organization. It's easy to remember as well, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. And don't forget, you can get your tickets for the upcoming Canuck Country Rock Show online. It's next Thursday, April 29th, and this year's virtual event will help raise funds that go towards local programs and resources that help support mental health. It's one of the alumni's biggest fundraisers of the year. It should be a lot of fun. Again, get your tickets right now online at VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. All right, let's hear from our next alumni guest, who played in over 1,000 games in the NHL, is one of the best players to ever come out of the Kootenay region of BC, and is considered by many to be one of the best playoff performers in Canucks history.
The next player profile is on former Canuck Greg Adams.
Back at the line to Babbage, long shot, Pipeline had trouble with it. Adams shoots, score!
Greg Adams was born and raised in the town of Nelson, BC, and as a teenager, would move to the Okanagan to pursue his hockey dreams. Never drafted into the NHL, he'd take a route to pro hockey that not many have taken, and eventually it would lead him to playing not only for his home provincial team, but as well in a Stanley Cup final. I had a chance to catch up with Greg when he was recently back in Vancouver with fellow alumni members who took part in the Hockey Helps the Homeless fundraiser. And I started out by asking Adams, was he always a Canucks fan growing up in the 70s and 80s?
Oh, definitely. I was a Canuck fan. But the other team that got my interest were the Islanders. I'm not sure why. I love Brian Trotsche, but next to them, the Canucks were the team that I followed and obviously paid a lot of attention to growing up as a kid.
Obviously, as a kid, you would have watched them a lot on Hockey Night in Canada, that being the Islanders and Trotsche. But back in the early days of the Vancouver Canucks, can you recall who some of your idols were that were playing at the Pacific Coliseum back in the 70s and 80s?
Well, I don't recall a whole lot. And Orland Kurtenbach was one name who always came to mind, and I think I followed my dad's lead on that because he was a big fan of Orland. So he was some guy or one of the guys that I followed a lot and paid close attention to when he played.
Growing up in Nelson, obviously, with the cold winters there, you're on the ice all the time. But did you play a lot of other sports growing up in that part of the province?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, that's a credit to my dad is he made me play every sport. Any sport that I had any kind of interest in, he would sign me up and get me out there to play, I think, which was a big advantage for me. He raised me as an athlete, not a hockey player, and that kind of helped me in my career.
How quickly time flies as a young kid growing up into your teenage years when eventually you would leave the friendly confinements of Nelson to move into the Okanagan to start your junior hockey career. What was that transition like? For some it's easy, for some it's difficult, but can you recall what it was like to leave the Kootenays and head to the Central Okanagan?
Well, it definitely wasn't an easy transition for me. I was cut from two teams before I ended up in Kelowna. I was cut from Penticton, and then I was cut from Vernon. And in the same year, I ended up playing for Kelowna. So it was a hard transition for myself to leave Nelson and my first time away from home and it not going very smoothly at the start. But it turned out to be a very positive thing for me.
Former Canucks forward Greg Adams is our guest today here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. All right, after a couple of years playing junior A hockey in Kelowna, you eventually started your college career, but it was not to a big-name hockey program like you would find out in the eastern U.S. How did you find yourself in Flagstaff, Arizona, for a team that I don't even know at that time, or even if they are still today, a conference team of any sort?
Yeah, well, it was never a conference team. We were an independent team, and I compare it to a baseball player going to Alaska. I mean, it was a bizarre situation. I wanted to go to college, and that was my goal. And it was just where I didn't get an offer from any of the big schools. I was kind of overlooked, and just kind of as my whole career kind of went in the early start, where I was overlooked a lot and never got the attention. So I'm very grateful that they gave me the opportunity to go down there. But we were an independent school that played almost exhibition games, so it was a bit of a difficult situation as far as a hockey career was going.
Although you can find it online and go through the college ranks your second year there, that I believe you were the highest scoring player in collegiate hockey in the U.S., and that was in your second year at Northern Arizona University. Were you even aware that you were leading the nation in scoring at that time?
It was a bit of a deceiving stat. I mean, some of our games were not against the top schools, obviously. We played, like I said, we're almost exhibition games, and teams that came down to play us were, even when they were the big schools, I think it was more of a getaway for them and a party time. So it was a deceiving stat, but, you know, I think it helped me get some recognition and something that I was grateful for.
Well, you'd have to think that NHL scouts, when they saw this name, Greg Adams, in Northern Arizona University, he's putting up these big numbers, that obviously he's got some skill, but you never did get picked in the NHL draft. Take us back to how you found out that you one day would be getting to the NHL after signing a professional contract with the New Jersey Devils. How did all of that play itself out?
Well, till this day, I don't even really know. It was, the situation I was in, it was such a surprise to actually keep going forward with my hockey career. At each stage, I thought, well, this could be the end. And junior, I thought, this could be the end. College, I thought, well, this is be the end of my career. I'm not going anywhere out of Northern Arizona, but it just goes to show that it was, you know, I guess it's meant to be. It was I don't even know exactly how it happened, but after, like you said, my second year in NCAA, I was getting a little recognition because I was leading the NCAA in scoring. But I had a couple scouts just watch me play, and then it was New Jersey, the New York Islanders, and Edmonton all showed some interest in me, which totally surprised me, and it was just like a whirlwind and almost unbelievable for myself at that time.
I'm sure that, and it sounds like your career up until that point was a whirlwind, not knowing if you'd be able to have a job playing anywhere, whether it was in junior or in college, and now all of a sudden you find yourself having signed on the dotted line with the Devils. What was it like? You start in Nelson, you go to Kelowna, then you go to Arizona. What was it like stepping onto the ice at the old Byrne Arena at the Meadowlands in New Jersey to see a childhood dream come true? After, I know you started your pro career with their farm team in Maine, but to fast forward a little bit, that must have just felt surreal.
It was, you know, I was pinching myself the whole time. Actually, my very first game was in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers, and coming from Nelson, British Columbia to New York was a little bit of a change. So, you know, stepping into that arena and putting on a New Jersey Devil jersey was unbelievable time for me. And like I said, everything just kind of progressed and happened so quickly that I was in a fog the whole time. I didn't feel like it was really happening, and I had to basically pinch myself the night before the game, is this really happening? But it was a great experience.
Greg Adams is our guest, joining us on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. As we now get to your time officially joining the organization, there's a lot of people that remember that trade vividly because the Canucks dealt away one of their best players to the Devils, and they were getting two players in return they didn't know much about, primarily because they didn't see the Devils that often. How do you remember the day when you and Kirk McLean found out that you were being traded to the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, to be honest, when I very first found out, I was very disappointed that I was getting traded. That's all that came into my mind, that this team that signed me now doesn't want me. And that was the only thought that came into my mind. It wasn't until basically right after I called my dad and I said, you know, I just got traded. And he going, well, where are you going? I said, Vancouver. He was so excited. And at that point, I started thinking, oh, yeah, this is a good thing, actually. This could be a good thing. But the initial shock of being traded was disappointing. It wasn't, I think, until I actually landed in Vancouver where I thought, you know, I almost felt comfortable. Okay, this feels pretty good being back here.
Well, you and Kirk were dealt for Patrick Sundstrom, who was one of the best Canucks players during his time on the West Coast. But I know right away Pat Quinn wanted to make sure you and your teammate coming in between the pipes not to feel any extra pressure, just go out and play. How valuable was that in your early time spent with the Canucks, knowing that message had come from the big Irishman?
Well, Pat had a special way of making everyone feel wanted and feeling comfortable. And like I said, I mean, I think just landing in Vancouver, I felt comfortable right away. But when Pat and Brian Burke was here then, who was my agent before he took the job with Vancouver, they talked to us both and explained what their goal is here and that we're a part of this. And it was a very, very good and very comfortable feeling where you wanted to be here and you wanted to perform for both those guys.
You came in when things were a little bit tough for the Canucks, but boy, did they change in a hurry after Pat and Brian were able to orchestrate some trades, and then Pat obviously went full-time behind the bench. Did you get a feeling as the years rolled along here in Vancouver that this team was turning into something special, and really it was just a matter of time before they would be a perennial playoff contender?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, right at the start, it wasn't there, but it was a couple years, and you could feel that Pat had his finger on the team and that it started to turn into his team after about two or three years, and you felt we were going in a positive direction, you know, and it didn't even show up that quickly, like with the wins and that. We had some tough years there, but it just felt like a competitive team all of a sudden, and Pat's influence just, it kind of spread through the team as well, because he was that type of guy. He was a very influential guy and very powerful man.
Who gave you the nickname Gus? Because a lot of Canucks fans won't be aware that there were two Greg Adams inside the same locker room at the time. Was that a coaching decision or a teammate's decision? Fill us in.
I had that nickname since I was a kid growing up, and the hockey world's a very small world, and it didn't matter where I went. Someone knew that. There was always at least one person that knew it and just kept it going. But it wasn't until the Canucks traded for the other Greg Adams and we're in, you know, playing together. And I think Bob McCammon put us on the same line. And I think Jim Robson started calling me Gus on TV. And from that moment on, I don't think anyone in Vancouver knows my real name. They think I'm Gus.
Well, it is indeed Greg Adams joining us here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. Let's go to the most important time of your career with this organization. And it was the spring and summer of 1994. Boy, there's been some big goals scored by this franchise over the last 50 years. Two of the biggest came from you in the Campbell final, Western Conference final against Toronto, and then in game one of the Stanley Cup final in Madison Square Garden. Is one moment bigger than the other, or are they just so special that they rank right up there as two of the greatest moments of your career?
Yeah, they were both very special for me. Maybe the goal against Toronto, because we had time after to celebrate and realize that we were going to the Stanley Cup Finals. The goal in New York, you're still so wrapped up in it, and you're still so amped up in the series, and that was just one game. It didn't mean quite as much, but I think the goal against Toronto and getting us to the Stanley Cup Finals is probably the goal that I'll remember my whole life.
Obviously, you fall short in the ultimate dream, but you would continue on to be a Vancouver Canuck, had some great numbers and great seasons during your time in Vancouver. You mentioned the fact how disappointed you were when New Jersey traded you away. Was it a similar feeling or even more disappointing when the Canucks eventually moved you on to the Dallas Stars?
Well, I think it was probably about 10 times more leaving Vancouver. I always felt like I said, I was comfortable in Vancouver from the day I got here, and this just felt like home for me, and it was a comfortable feeling being here. I loved being in Vancouver, and when I finally did get traded to Dallas, it was a huge, huge disappointment. I knew that it's part of the game, and these things happen, and I have no regrets or bad feelings about it, but it was just it was a hard day in my life, and a day that was, I'll remember as being a very disappointing day.
You know, you'd finish off your career eventually with Phoenix and continue to make your home now full-time in Arizona. How often do you get a chance to see the Canucks? Do you keep as close tabs as possible on what today's version and in their 50th anniversary year are doing?
They're my team. I watch and keep track of the Canucks and what's going on here every chance I get. I will always be a Canuck in my mind, and whenever they're on or whenever I get a chance to see what's going on with the Canucks, I pay very close attention and love being part of it.
Finally, for those of our listeners that aren't aware of what Greg Adams is doing with his life these days, long into retirement, fill them in. It's not like you're spending time in a hockey rink that often. You're keeping quite busy in a new career.
Yeah, I'm in between my golf games down in Phoenix. I've started in with a real estate career, and I've been doing that. My wife and myself have got a business going down there, and we've been running that down in the Phoenix area.
It's such a treat to catch up with you. Some of these stories that you have told our listeners today from your time prior to, during, and after the Canucks are definitely stories that are going to hit home with a lot of our listeners here in British Columbia. Greg, thanks for doing this.
Thanks a lot, Joey. I appreciate it.
That's former Canucks forward Greg Adams joining us here on Canucks Connected on the home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Joey Kenward. Thanks again for being with us. At this time of our show, we're going to scan through the Canucks record books to highlight some of the more unique milestones in the club's 50-year history. And whether you remember them or have never heard of them, it's time once again for This Week in Canucks History.
Time for This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery. Proud supporters of the Canucks alumni. Check out their great selection of award-winning wines at deserthills.ca.
All right, let's start with April 18th, 1994, when Kirk McLean recorded the first ever road playoff shutout in team history. That night, the series opener of the Western Conference quarterfinal between the Canucks and Flames was in Calgary. And that night, Vancouver got goals from Jeff Courtnell, Cliff Ronning, Dave Babich, Jeff Brown, and Trevor Linden. But McLean was razor sharp between the pipes, stopping all 31 shots that came his way. That would be McLean's third playoff shutout of his career. Also on April 18th, this time in 2012, Corey Schneider did something no Canucks goalie has ever done in a playoff game, and that was make a save on a penalty shot. That night marked Game 4 of Vancouver's opening round series with the LA Kings, and the Canucks were facing elimination that night. Early in the third period, Vancouver was in a 2-1 lead at the Staples Center, but things got tense when Kevin Bieksa hauled down Dustin Brown on a breakaway. The Kings captain stepped up for the chance to tie the game, but Schneider was equal to the task, keeping Vancouver in the lead. For what it's worth, that's the last time a penalty shot has been called in any Canucks playoff game. And finally, on April 22, 1996, Alexander Mogilny tied a Canucks playoff record with three assists on home ice in what was Game 4 of their first-round playoff series with Colorado. The Canucks superstar had helpers on goals by Esa Tiikkanen, Jyrki Lume, and Joseph Baranek that night. Gino Ogic scored the game winner, and Corey Hirsch made 30 saves to propel Vancouver to a 4-3 win over the Avalanche, tying that series up at two games apiece. That does it for another edition of This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery. And that does it for another edition of our show. Thanks again for being with us. I want to again thank our Canuck alumni guests, BC Hockey Hall of Fame members Steve Tambellini and Greg Adams. Hey, if there's a Canuck alumni member you want to hear from, let us know. Reach us on Twitter. You can either get to me directly at Kenward's Corner, and that's Kenward's Corner with a K, or you can get to our radio station's handle, which is at Sportsnet 650. Don't forget to visit the Canuck alumni website to get your tickets for next Thursday's Canuck Country Rock Show. It should be a fun one with many fantastic musicians on stage at the same time as your favorite former Canucks. The website to get those tickets is VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. Stay with us. Coming up next, Jamie Dodd is going to get you prepped up for tonight's Canucks game with Canucks Central Saturday. He'll then make way for the pregame show hosted by Satyar Shah at 6 o'clock. That leads right into puck drop between the Canucks and Ottawa Senators. Brendan Batchelor and Corey Hirsch will have the call coming up at 7. On behalf of executive producer of Canucks Hockey, Cam Barra, this is Joey Kenward saying thanks for listening, and I look forward to having you join us next time as we continue to profile the Vancouver Canucks alumni here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.